Chapter 43. I quickly refold the statements as a vehicle enters the garage. It sounds like Dana's Mercedes rather than the behemoth Hummer. I finish just as she enters the house from the garage. Waylon barks persistently. "What's going on, big guy?" Dana calls from the bottom of the stairs. "He's ratting me out," is what's happening. Waylon runs upstairs as I finish putting the statements in order in the shoebox. Squawk! I jump at the noise. A squirrel shouts at me from the windowsill. I reach for the nearby bag of Cheetos and toss one wrinkled orange stub toward the window. The squirrel is supposed to flee. Instead, it comes further into the room and protests more. Squawk! Waylon dashes upstairs. His barks set off the squirrel, which does a frantic lap around the room, too scared to retrace its steps back to the window. "What the hell is going on?" Dana shouts, running up the stairs. "What if she can unlock the door?" My hands shake so badly that I knock the black ash basket while returning the shoebox to the shelf. It slips through my fingers. Dana tries the door handle. When I turn to scoop up the basket, its matching lid is a step away. I pick up the basket by the opening. Something soft brushes against my fingertips. My heart skips a beat. I tip the basket upside down, staring at the floor where Dad's scarf lands. Green, like my mother's eyes. Levi kept it from me. He had it all along. Heart racing, I shove the scarf into my hoodie pouch. Waylon goes crazy on Dana's side, and the squirrel dashes around on my side. "This is Judge Dana Firekeeper." I think she's talking to me until she says, "I live at 124 Hilltop Court. Someone's in my house. My dog's going crazy, and someone's in my son's room." Dana called 911. I put the lid on the basket and return it to the shelf. "Please, Waylon, bark louder so it masks the closet door." Bam! Dana kicks at the door while I dash to the other one, leading to the garage. Bam! I turn the deadbolt latch and grasp the doorknob with the push-button lock in its center. Opening the door, I push the button to relock it. I can't do anything about the deadbolt. Bam! I reach the top step and close the door behind me. Crack! Dana bursts into Levi's bedroom as I practically ski down the stairs. While I race to the back door of the garage, Dana shrieks at the squirrel running around the room. Waylon loses his damn mind. I stay close to the garage, beneath the overhang of the roof in case Dana looks out the window. Then I tiptoe along the side of the garage, listening for footsteps chasing me, eyeballing my target, the street beyond the trees at the end of the driveway. The barks grow fainter, like Waylon is tearing down the hallway. There's the shattering of something delicate, a crystal vase, maybe, and Dana swearing. I take my chances and run like hell. Mom's car is gone, but I still lock myself in the bathroom. My heart thumps like Wabus after a narrow escape. Something sour churns in my stomach an instant before I violently heave greenish-yellow bile. It leaves me exhausted and hunched over the toilet. The emptiness inside me is replaced by something far worse. Nibwakawin. Auntie told me the translation, breaking down each part of the word so it made perfect sense. To be wise is to live with an abundance of sight. My whole life I've wanted to be like my aunt, the way a person dreams about being a ballerina, but not of broken toes and years of practice. I wanted to be a strong and wise Nishkawe, never considering how that abundance of sight would be earned. I wanted to find out who was involved in the meth madness that took Lily and Uncle David, Robin and Heather too, and the kids in Minnesota who got so sick from Meth X. The person I was searching for this whole time was Levi. Wisdom is not bestowed. In its raw state, it is the heartbreak of knowing things you wish you didn't. Mom comes home while my stomach heaves. I turn on the fan to muffle my retching. Her feet make dark shadows at the bottom gap of the door, next to Harry's paw reaching underneath for invisible prey. "Are you okay, honey?" Her soft voice is full of concern. "Yeah, just ate something bad." I wait for her to move away from the door. She does, but returns a few moments later. "I've got some Gatorade for you." Once she mentions it, my dry throat wants nothing more. "Can you leave it by the door?" I croak. Mom can't help with this situation. I try to dry heave more quietly so she will leave. I don't hear her anymore. She must have stepped away. I slide the pocket door. Harry bursts in as soon as there's clearance for her fat body. "Are you pregnant?" Mom sits with her back against the wall, opposite the bathroom door. I shudder while reaching for the neon yellow drink. "No, I'm on birth control. Thank God for Norplant." Mom looks away. I watch for clues to her reaction. "I'm glad you have Teddy." Mom doesn't seem glad, more like disappointed. "But you have me too. You can bring your problems to me instead of keeping secrets." She takes a deep, steadying breath. "If you ever get into a situation, I will always help you." "If I robbed a bank, you'd drive the getaway car?" I say, smiling weakly. She nods. "I'd make sure you wore a seatbelt, too." I crawl to her. She kisses my forehead. Leaning against her, I rest my head on her shoulder. The weight of my secrets is exhausting. My whole life has been filled with them. Even as a zygote, I floated in an embryonic sack of secrecy. If I tell Mom one secret, will I vomit the rest of my secrets all over her? And which one would I open with? Do I start with the earliest one and work forward? Or last in, first out? Uncle David would have me tackle the highest priority first and list all the rest in descending order. I decide to begin with the secret that provides the foundation for all the rest. "It's hard to tell you things because I don't want you to worry or to let you down. I've already caused you so much pain." "Pain?" Her surprise is genuine. "Donis, you are the greatest joy of my life. But I'm the reason your life is stuck in limbo now. If I hadn't been born, maybe everything could have been different for you and Dad." Then I say the worst thing I've ever heard about myself. "I was the first of all the bad things for both of you." She looks at me in astonishment, until an epiphany flickers in her eyes. It lights up her face. "Children are never to blame for their parents' lives. Parents are the adults. We are the ones responsible for our choices and how we handle things." She sits taller at the revelation. "If I'm in limbo, it's because I chose to remain there. Even inaction is a powerful choice." Mom rises with an abundance of sight, holds out her hand for me. I take it. She lifts me into a tight embrace that flows through me, continues through the earth's crust and mantle, making its way to the solid inner core. "My life, my choices," she says, "not yours." My second attempt at a bath goes better. Mom runs the bath water for me and adds her favorite bubble bath. When my thoughts go to Levi and what I need to do next, I turn on the bath jets and disappear beneath a mountain of lilac-scented bubbles. An hour later, I zip my black jeans with pruny fingers. The sports bra I grab is also black and has wide straps to cover the purple bruise branding my shoulder to hide the evidence. As I pull on a black Henley, there's one moment when my raised arms are immobile and I feel his words on the back of my neck. "The hallway cameras recorded you coming here willingly." Will it be like this from now on? Flashbacks? A scent? Remembering things he said that I hoped to forget? A bite-shaped bruise I'll still see long after it fades? I wish I'd never agreed to be a CI. "Donis, honey, I just remembered. Levi stopped by yesterday on his way to Shagala. So handsome in his tuxedo." Mom's voice travels down the hallway ahead of her footsteps. You haven't said a word about last night. How was everything? I quickly check my appearance in the full-length mirror next to my bedroom door. It was fine, I say. Fine, fine, fine. Mom continues from the doorway. Just fine? Did you and Jamie have a fight? Her brow furrows. Something like that, I say. Do you want to talk about it? I'm good, Mom. I smile so the crease at the top of her nose will smooth out. It does. She looks around my bedroom, zeroing in on the unwrapped gift. What did Levi give you? I reach for the framed photo already on my nightstand, turn it toward her. Mom's first smile is for the overall image. Her second is for my father. After 20 years, she remains besotted with him. I'm torn between seeing her devotion as a triumph or as an anchor weighing her down. Can it be both? I don't see how. Reluctantly, she tears her gaze away from him. Didn't Levi give you another present? She asks. I look around. I think this is it, I say. But he walked in with two boxes, one gift wrapped and one plain. He said he'd leave them in your room. I shrug, feeling my sore left shoulder. I must be imagining it, but I can almost feel the clenching of his fingers. Mom tells me it's time for her to head to Evercare. Do I need anything before she leaves? I want answers. No, I don't. Curiosity killed the cat. Doubt tore her into pieces. Mom leaves. As soon as the front door closes, I look for Levi's second box. My brother gave me the choker at Shagala last night and the framed photo for me to find today. Where is the other gift? It feels like deja vu from searching Levi's bedroom earlier today. I check beneath my mattress, under my bed, each desk drawer and dresser drawer, every bookcase shelf. I pause to ask myself aloud if I'm losing my mind. I get no response. I continue to the closet. Top shelf, second shelf, boxes of shoes, my fuck you pumps. I slide hangers of outfits Grand Mary hoped I'd wear. The bottom of my closet has a laundry hamper and my hockey gear duffel bag. My stinky uniform will rot if I don't wash it. I pick up my bag to drag it into the sunlight. There's a cardboard box beneath the gear bag. Is this what my mom saw? Why would Levi hide a birthday gift for me? I forget about my smelly undershirt, clingy shorts, team uniform, and socks. When I open the box, it's filled with plain hockey pucks. I don't understand why this would be a gift for me. I claw my way to the middle of the box, grab a random puck, and raise it like buried treasure. It's a smeared Dreamcatcher hockey puck, the same kind from the weekend in Green Bay. Things that make me angry about the damn puck. 1. Dreamcatchers. Seriously. 2. Substandard printing of said Dreamcatchers on pucks going to Nish kids. 3. Donated by Grant Edwards, Coach Bobby said. 4. The pucks aren't even regulation weight. I only realize the last item on the list when the puck is in my hand. It's slightly lighter. Most people would never notice. But as someone who played for years and slept with a puck under her pillow the night before games, I can tell. My thumb slides along the bottom of the puck, feeling a hairline crack. Yet another complaint for my list. Eyeballing the bottom of the puck, I see that the crack runs just inside the perimeter. Not a crack. The puck has a lid. I use the rubbery underside of my mouse pad to hold the bottom of the puck in place while I twist the lid. A folded paper towel nests in the partly hollow middle. I peel back its corners to reveal the hidden treasure that has devastated my community and countless others. The crystals resemble uncut raw diamonds, cloudy, lesser quality specimens, made haphazardly, without regard for precise protocols. My meth was so much better. Even Jamie's would score a higher price than this crap. The hidden treasure is the answer to a question I hadn't thought to ask until now. How does Levi, the mule, distribute meth to other communities. The question I don't want to ask myself. Why would my brother leave a box of these hockey pucks in my bedroom? Mathematics, like science, has a language. Although I'm not passionate about math the way I am about science, I am functionally fluent in its numbers, letters, notations, symbols, and jargon. Scientists and mathematicians approach problems differently. Scientists collect data in order to disprove a null hypothesis, the absence of a difference or relationship. In contrast, mathematicians seek to prove a theory rather than disprove it. A proof is a set of conditional statements that build logically to a conclusion, thereby turning a theory into a theorem. A deep theorem is a proof that is particularly lengthy or complex, or includes unexpected connections. Right now, I need both approaches to work through this. I sit on my bed with Dad's scarf draped over my shoulders, the paper towel of crystal meth in one hand and his choker in the other. A fierce battle is being waged in my head. The null hypothesis that Levi Firekeeper has nothing to do with the meth devastation versus Donis Fontaine's deep theorem of her brother's involvement in all the bad things. If the FBI is investigating meth activity aligning with the Supes team schedule, then people of interest include players, players' families, coaching staff, and fans. If Uncle David hid his notebook where only I could find it and wrote in a code he knew I could decipher, then he clearly wanted me to know that the new mushroom he found was not connected to Meth X and did not cause the group hallucination. If the Nish kids weren't having a mushroom-induced group hallucination, then what they saw was a shared encounter with Anishinaabeg spirit beings. If my uncle chose not to reveal the dead-end information with the FBI, then he intended for them to continue on a wild goose chase. If Uncle David went missing after sharing his concerns about Lightbulb, the bright student involved in meth, with Lightbulb's mom, then the parent, Angie Flint, needs to be questioned about my uncle's suspicious death. If the fake pucks were how meth was being distributed, then the person donating the pucks, Grant Edwards, is involved. If bank statements showing foreign wire transfers were found in the team captain's bedroom, then that player, Levi Firekeeper, is part of the meth operations and laundering his share of the profits. If the wire transfers were made in my name to an offshore account and the pucks were planted in my closet, then that player, my brother, is setting me up. If Levi has been setting me up, then he is part of the meth cell, and he is connected to the devastation meth has caused in our community and everywhere else it has been distributed. If Levi has been weaving this web around me, tighter and tighter, then what will he do next? My BlackBerry buzzes with an incoming text at the same time as I hear urgent knocking at the front door. I react like a guilty person, hiding the scarf inside the pumpkin dress at the back of my closet. The puck fits in the dress pocket. I grab my phone while rushing to the front door. Ron, have you heard from Jamie since last night? My first thought, hell no. My second, that must be Ron at the door. My third, why would Ron be texting and knocking at the same time? At the door is the last person I expect to see. Dana. Fear grips me. Did she see me running away from her garage? She's shaking and crying. Not angry. She's scared. Can you help me? She pleads. It's Levi. I think he's in trouble.